We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It's Tuesday night and got two of my league mates from the Highlander Dynasty Invitational here with me. Got the Itch from Razzball, got Chris Marr from Baseball Pods, and this is just, it's a fun league to talk about. I think it's got the funnest constitution of any Dynasty League I've ever played in. Big thanks to co-commish Brett Sayre for that, but thanks for joining me, guys. We just participated in our redistribution draft, which is one of several off-season drafts, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a couple players from each team in some cases, some cases more, some cases less, get drafted to a different team and get kind of poached off of another team's roster. And so we're going to talk about our sort of thought process, our strategy, the players we got. I did just want to take a quick look back last year, just to kind of give people a sense of the caliber of players available here. We've got, at this point, I think we've got close to like 200 players protected heading into this thing. And I went back and looked at last year's, it's two 20 pick rounds, so 40 total picks. Last year's redistribution draft, in my opinion, I think the three best players all went outside the top 10 in that. Brandon Pfaadt went 11th, Bryson Stott went 22nd, and Ha-Seong Kim went 26th out of 40 picks. So that's kind of the caliber of player we're sort of hoping to land in this type of exercise. The Highlander draft, you might have some more kind of high-end players to choose from, but we're trying to get those types of players on our roster here. Chris, you protected seven players in advance of this redistribution draft. You already had a handful of other keepers protected, but Kodai Senga, Nolan Jones, Bailey Ober, Lovin, Tanner Scott, Chris McKenzie, and Everett Ruiz were your seven most recent protected players. Chris, like, you want to kind of give us sort of a rundown of where you can see your team heading into the what your frame of mind was, when you got going to need, when you
available. James, I still want to start over, but your audio totally quit on me. I don't know if it was just me or if Nick can hear. Nick, were you having issues as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, we couldn't hear you at all. You kind of went into an echo chamber.
Just at the end. Just when you were reading out the names. Yeah,
just when you said you started the name of my players.
Gotcha. Yeah. It was Kodai Senga, Nolan Jones, Ha-Seong Kim, Bailey Ober, Tanner Scott, Tristan McKenzie, and Kyber Ruiz were your seven protected players. So I don't know if you heard the whole question, but just kind of a lay of the land, like your thoughts heading into this redistribution draft.
Well, so like the last 2 years, I finished kind of middle of the pack in the league, and I felt like I needed to make a move. I was just going to stay there. I mean, you took the approach of like really drafting for the future, and now your team's kind of on the come. Other people drafted for win now, and one of the things I don't like doing in a big dynasty league, especially, is just treading water. So one of the moves I made before this was to trade my first round pick from a couple years ago, Yordan Alvarez, who is arguably the best hitter in baseball, but also someone who I'm a little bit worried about as he gets older in a dynasty league. And I needed, in this league, you need contributions across the board. So I kind of wanted to flatten out my talent a little bit. And I moved Yordan for Logan Webb and Kodai Senga and Ha-Seong Kim and Davis Schneider. And so what you see here is like the results of that. You stole Kyle Bradish from me, and that was, I figured I was going to lose Kyle Bradish or Nolan Jones, but now I've got like, I don't have a superstar, but I have a little bit more of a flat. My keepers this year are much better in this round than they were last year because of that trade. So we'll see if it works. I was finished, I think, ninth last year, maybe. I'm hoping to finish like in the top five and maybe even push to cash this year because I've got a bunch of players in my prime, many of whom you just mentioned. And, and also, by the way, my pitching was really terrible last year. And I knew I was going to probably lose Bradish. So getting two like good starters like Webb and Senga, I feel like put me in a really good place to outperform at least where I was last year. So that what you heard is a lot of those guys are the results of that deal taking place.
Yeah, that was a blockbuster for sure. But I think it made sense. I mean, this league is so unique. It's even, I'm one of the commissioners, but I mean, I didn't really have much to do with the rules, but it's even taken me kind of a couple years to really think that I've really got a handle of like what I should be doing during the off season with these drafts and how I can be using them best to kind of improve my roster. And I think that's, in your situation, getting quantity for quality makes sense because you have to protect a certain number of guys before this draft. So you want to make sure that talent base is as high as it can be. Itch, you have seven great guys that you protected most recently as well. Camilo Duvall, Josh Naylor, Chris Sale, Jacob deGrom, TJ Friedel, Jeffrey Springs, Xavier Isaac. Interesting that you got Sale, deGrom, and Springs there. Three awesome, sometimes injured pitchers. What are you kind of thinking about where your team's at and your kind of strategy? Obviously, I should have mentioned actually earlier that Itch won the very first season of the Highlander. So, you don't have anything to prove in this league, of course. But where are things sort of standing right now, or at least heading into the redistribution draft?
So the first season was most redrafty, right? Like I just sort of played it like a redraft and sold future picks. And so year two was last year I got to pay the price and just watch everybody take players off my team. And the double up penalty for winning the league, I hated it last year, but then this year watching it on Jesse's team, and I think Shelley took Dustin May at the very end and to get that fourth player off of Jesse's team. Otherwise he was going to get through the draft without, surrendering the maximum amount of players from his championship roster. And it like really does matter from the other angle, from the other side. It's like, it's the board game aspect of this league. It's more board gamey than any league I've ever played in that way. Like it just, this year I started to see it. The lifespan is longer than I had previously thought of it as. Like it has a longer tail if we could keep in it, because like 7-8 years in, people are still going to be trying out sort of new strategies, I think, because it's so complicated and not complicated in a way you can't get eventually, but like it's the board games are tough. I don't know. Like I just have the right amount of complication before my brain's just like, no, this is too much, and shut out. Like I want it to be intricate and difficult, and this is that, and so I think it might have a longer life than a typical league, and I wasn't previously thinking that. I do think there could be some commissioner burnout, maybe not, just it seems like a lot of work to manage it, but as long as there's a bunch of people involved, that helps, and people could maybe take a turn at doing some of the legwork.
Yeah, I mean, big shout to reigning champ Jesse Roach for doing a lot of the heavy lifting with the commissioner work so far. But yeah, I mean, we've got, you know, I'm a co-commish, Brett's a co-commish. So if Jesse ever needs a hand, I'm sure somebody will step up. But I mean, it's a fun league. I think people are really enjoying these drafts sort of sprinkled throughout the off season. Just kind of makes it a bit more, you know, interactive. Like I'm most of my dynasty leagues, I go months at a time without having to do anything. Maybe even months without talking to anyone else in the league. So it's cool to have these moments throughout the off season, like the Highlander draft, like the redistribution draft. So let's get into that redistribution draft here. Well, actually I'll go ahead and just say who my keepers were first. The seven guys I kept ahead of the redistribution draft were Kyle Manzardo, Parker Meadows, Matt Wallner, Vaughn Grissom, Jose Berrios, Andres Munoz, and Cade Horton. Meadows and Wallner probably seem like a reach to some, but those are two guys I'm very high on heading into 2024. And actually, yeah, before we get to this quick itch, I was told by Jordan that because Jordan Rosenblum traded me Starling Marte ahead of the redistribution draft. And he said, you know, if you want to get Xavier Isaac, you might be able to get Xavier Isaac straight up from the itch for Starling Marte. And I didn't even reach out to you because Marte just fit so perfectly with my roster from what I kind of needed with the speed and the outfielder. But I definitely have Xavier Isaac ranked way ahead of Starling Marte for a regular dynasty league. So just quickly, would you have done that straight up here if I'd offered you Marte for Isaac?
I don't think so. I think he thought Springs was what, I don't know, for some reason, you know, there's so many conversations. I have a lot of conversations with Jordan. So
yeah, Jordan.
I'm sure that I said whatever he said, I said, because I'm sure he has receipts because we have a lot of conversations. He's the most fun to have in a league, I think, that way. Like he's a crucial part of this league in terms of. Yeah. Like that role that you're explaining right there, like that's one of his powers in the league is he's this connective tissue. Like I'll take these players from you and give them over to him. Like there just aren't that many people who are willing to do that, which is a fun way to play a league too. I don't know.
It's kind of a full-time job rejecting his trades. I mean,
I get emails from students and I get trade offers from Jordan. That's like what happens. No, that's not fair. I send him a lot of offers too because I know he's up for the, you know, whatever. Just fire them back and forth. Nobody responds faster with a counter. Like he would find
Jordan's
a way.
He's very. I mean, any dynasty league would be lucky to have Jordan in it.
Sure.
Okay, so let's get to the.
James, I was just going to say one thing that I thought was interesting about Parker Meadows and Wallner is this is not a normal dynasty league, and therefore prospects don't carry the same cachet they normally would. But I think, first of all, I'm very high on Meadows. Maybe I like Wallner as well. Just in general, I don't understand why Meadows isn't more highly rated by the fantasy community. But, like, proximity and playing time matter so much in this league. And you can't stash, like, prospects that are 16, 17, 18 years old. You can, but they carry less value in this league with the way it's structured than they would in a traditional dynasty league. So that's just something else I wanted to bring up. I think that's one of the reasons Meadows and Wallner were great keepers is like Wallner's not a prospect anymore, but they're players who are like, they're going to play every day. And it's one of the reasons actually I made the deal for Jordan was it's a little bit of a risk, but getting David Schneider was not just a throw in. Like in this league, he could actually be a big difference maker. Whereas in other leagues, he'd probably be more of a fringe player. If he gets everyday playing time for the Blue Jays, just getting those everyday at bats can be really hard to find in this league.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and that's applicable to the prospects we'll be discussing that went in the redistribution draft. Because, yeah, I mean, it's not just a normal league where you keep 40 players or keep 50 players year to year. and you're obviously going to have a bunch of great prospects in those leagues. Like you're only, you don't necessarily know which guys you're going to be able to keep at each stage of everything. So yeah, having those guys in the majors is definitely key. And I definitely was sort of going after as many kind of guys that could break out at the big league level early in the season as I could get. Okay. So first overall pick here, Brett Sayre. He took Dylan Cruz with the first pick in the Highlander draft, and he gets Dylan Cruz's teammate James Wood here with the first pick, stealing him from Jeff Ponce. I think Wood probably the highest consensus ranked prospect available for this draft. I actually have Jett Williams ranked ahead of James Wood, just in terms of prospects available here, and
Masayo maybe as well, depending on the list you're looking at.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so yeah, I think in any kind of like prospect ADP type of thing, you're going to see James Wood probably highest of all the available prospects. What, you know, maybe even more interesting than just breaking down James Wood, did you guys have a player that you, did you take the time to kind of put together a board before this? And did you have a player that you definitely thought was best available for your specific rosters?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, I did. Like I was saying, I sort of flashed it before. I don't know. The crowd at home can see the color-coded roster by roster breakdown of who's available, but I didn't realize Jesse was going to do a spreadsheet for us. But so I wanted to be, and so I sort of did the work across when I had minutes here or there, and then I made a list. But I make it a living document, so I'm cleaning it up as I go. So I think I had him fourth or fifth, James Wood, on my list, but he was sort of who I was eyeing. With the 10th pick, I was thinking maybe just as we were saying about prospects and the high strikeouts, I had sort of thought maybe he'd fall, and he was like, I was scared to have him there because I wanted Means. I wanted a pitcher. I took John Means 10th, and I just needed starting pitching. And I don't know. I mean, I'm big into him this year, that a lefty in Baltimore with that left field fence and just like a contact managed. I mean, he's like so perfect. If you were to draw up like who's going to succeed in that park. And then that team is, you know, so ridiculously loaded, and Rutschman is maybe the best. And I just feel like everything points to, He's a free agent, I believe. I was looking at this. John Means, I believe, is a free agent after this year. So even if the smart money might say his innings are going to be limited, I think he's 30 or 31. I think he might just throw as long as his arm will go. Anyway, yeah, I was interested in James Wood, but I didn't. He's not a great fit for what I'm trying to do because I'm trying to win again this year. If I can get my pitchers to come back, like you said, with DeGrom and Sale and Springs, if I can get to them like a relay race kind of situation, then I might have a shot.
But, yeah, I was loving the way Means looked when he came back last year. I know the strikeouts weren't really there, but just watching him, I thought he just looked really in control. Was a little scared about that like little elbow thing at the end of the year, but I think I'm sort of back to being comfortable kind of taking him where he's going. And everything you said about Means is kind of why I was going after Bradish in the Highlander from Chris. And that's just a really awesome aspect of this league is that you can, I bet like 20 different managers, the kind of preference of who they wanted in these drafts, it's just so different because like, you're like, I need pitching. And I was like, I'm going to take best catcher available. And it's just, everyone's coming at it from a different lens. What were you kind of thinking, Chris? Did you have a top guy on your board coming into this?
Yeah, I had a grouping. I mean, I needed outfield help, and I wanted something in second base. And so I probably would have taken Kerry Carpenter. Chris Clegg sniped me right before that pick. But I went with Brandon Drury. He's a little older, so not perfect, but he's underrated, I think. He's just got solid skills, too. He should get playing time galore, first base, second base eligibility. So if I'm trying to push in and try to see what I can do this year, I wanted an everyday bat. I'm glad Smada took Basayo from me. That would have been a hard to pass up because I just think he could be debuting next year, and I think he's going to be great, and I think he's going to be catcher, first base. They'll find a place to play him. And I would have taken – I think I would have had a Jet – first, if I was looking for a prospect, then Basayo, and then Wood. I'm lower on Wood than the consensus. I'm willing to be wrong on it. I understand that the upside is through the roof. I'm just the way that the Nationals develop players, I have no faith in. So he just gets a little bit of, and he's got work to do to realize that potential. So understand completely why Brett took him there. But yeah, you're right, James. I think it's interesting, like different people are going to be looking for different things. And I was just really looking for everyday hitter kind of in his prime. And I think the best pick of this whole draft was what Nick brought up earlier, which was Shelley's pick of Dustin May. One of the things to think about is teams get closed off, right? So everybody except for the champion, once two players get taken from your team, you can't pick anyone else from that team. So you may have this big board, and I think that's what you were talking about, Nick. You got this big board, and you're like, oh, here's five players. Like, James, you had like four or five players I would have been looking at with my second pick, but you got like closed off. And I was just like, dang. So now I'm down to like – I can only pick my pick with like three – I've got like six teams left with my final pick to pick before. And to find like Dustin May, who could actually be something really valuable down the road with the final pick – I thought was a work of art. I thought that was the best pick of the draft.
I thought it was definitely the best in terms of getting the reaction from Jesse that I think we all wanted.
That's just gravy. That's just the gravy that Shelly poured on the mashed potatoes.
And there's like extra on top of that too, because she's coming in. It's her first draft in the league, I think. She didn't. Yeah. It's a niche rule, you know, like it's good on her to pick up that's a thing that we're doing. I don't know. I'm sure somebody gave her a rundown, but it's like, it was well done. Totally agree. My favorite pick of the draft by far.
I'm really glad that it was the 40th pick too.
And he'd just taken Suarez from my team, I think, at 19. So I was almost going to get through with just one player taken, such as the state of my roster. Like through no like real smart work on my part. Just that's where I'm at. But Jesse took Robert Suarez.
So Brett goes James Wood. That's really fun that he's got Cruz and Wood. mean, if those guys both hit, that'd be great for him. With the second and third pick, Smada takes Brandon Nimmo and Kevin Hastings takes MJ Melendez. Just two outfielders. You know, you would think that Melendez is going to play pretty much every day. I did not protect him. That Melendez was from my team. You know, the projections are higher on Melendez, and I think people would probably guess based on his 2023 season. My biggest concern with, like, I didn't feel like he was quite of the caliber guy I was looking to keep, just because, you know, he's basically a DH at this point, but he's playing in the outfield, and I just don't know how long they're going to keep sacrificing defense there for what might be close to like a league average hitter. But, you know, obviously decent amount of power, a little bit of speed from Melendez, and then Brandon Nimmo, just perennially underrated. This is not an OBP league, but even so, you know, I think he's just a great player to have in most 20 team leagues. You know, I think in this league where MLB playing time is prized as much as it is, you know, Nimmo's a great number two overall pick. Either of you guys have any thoughts on those two outfielders coming off the board?
I've had Nimmo in this league in the first year. He's in 100 outfielder. We have the double utility spot. Like, so it's 100 outfielders a week plus whoever's playing utility with outfield eligibility. And Nimmo's going to score 100 runs, you know, ideally. And, yeah, that was a solid pick. And Melendez, I have learned, I believe Kevin is a Royals fan. Not that I don't know. I was eyeing Manoah. Not that I would have maybe jumped Manoah up on your team, but if we're going to talk trade at some point, I'm willing to take the risk on Manoah. But anyway, no, I just wasn't really thinking about Melendez from your roster. There's a Kerry Carpenter is. Anyway,
I did not know who was going to get picked from my roster. I was hoping that no one would take Luis Severino. Manoah is that's funny. I think Manoah is maybe my most watched Instagram feed, like when it comes up, like when his stories come up, like whenever I open Instagram, like Manoah's stories are like first up for me, because I'm monitoring the off season. I'm keeping tabs on what he's doing. I know he recently got married, but he's back at it. He's throwing bullpens. He's working out. So definitely keeping tabs on Manoah, and did not lose him here.
Certainly one of the more entertaining pitchers to watch, especially when he's on or when he's off, but. In terms of Melendez, I mean, hell, if the Royals had three major league regular outfielders, I think they'd be happy. Instead, they seem to have like nine part-time outfielders. So I feel like Melendez, maybe there's something else there. I haven't figured him out as a hitter, to be honest. Like he was worse than I thought he would be. And then once I'd kind of written him off, some of his underlying metrics look better than I thought they would, which is, I think, what's driving some of those projections. So, you know, like I said, but literally every day at bats that don't kill you in this league are going to help you win a championship. So both great picks. Well, Nimmo was a great pick. I thought Melendez was a fine pick, and maybe Kevin knows more about more about him than we do.
Yeah. Drew Saylor, their hitting coordinator, who has had a lot of success with the Royals.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I need to sort of figure out kind of what the, GM quotes and manager quotes are with that outfield, because that's a great point, Chris. I love Drew Waters this year. He was kind of like a backup option with my second pick, and I hope they play him. But like you said, they've got just a bunch of guys who are sort of guys you'd want as your third outfielder, maybe your fourth outfielder, and they don't really have anyone who is better than that. The fourth overall pick, Smada took Samuel Basayo, aforementioned, closing out Jeff. Jeff was the first team to get closed out, loses James Wood and Basayo in the first four picks. Chris, I know you were kind of talking up Basayo earlier. Yeah, I think he's he's a challenging guy for me to rank, just because I don't think – on this team, I don't really see a path to like him being a 600 plus plate appearance guy. But I, you know, I think if he's 500 plate appearances, he's still probably like a top 15 fantasy catcher, maybe top 10. But are you, I mean, cause my fear is that Kobe Mayo is even better and he's going to be the first baseman. And then they've still got these kind of veteran guys that need to DH a little bit. Heston Kjerstad fits best at DH as well. But I mean, are you sort of thinking like a trade maybe knock something loose there, or just Basayo's even better than Mayo?
They got to trade at some point, right? I mean, hell, even Joey Ortiz might be a MLB regular shortstop, and he's like probably fourth on their depth chart there. It's like they have to shake this loose, I think, at some point. It's been a really slow offseason, but I'm hoping that the Baltimore does. I mean, Connor Norby's a guy that we'll talk about a little bit later. Another great bat. They have all these bats in the minors that are probably, you at least want to see if they're going to be regular major league hitters, just losing value. So Basayo isn't there yet. He's a year, you know, probably at least a year away. But I just feel like there should be a role between catcher, first base, and DH for his bat, assuming that it's as good as I think it is.
Some of these guys. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was asking if you had any Basayo thoughts.
Oh, like some of these guys, I try to get as good a visual look as you can through, and it's so much better now than it's ever been through, you know, jumping to game feeds. I was thinking of Dairon Blanco when you were talking about the Royals, because I've seen him a few times at like field level in AAA and at high, and it's like he looks so good at field level. Like I feel like they should give Dairon Blanco a chance, the Royals. But Basayo is like a jaw-dropping, in my opinion, hitter. Like it's like I think you just let go of catching. Like I don't know, maybe he can still do it once in a while, but just like for the purposes of where he's at in their org, I don't know. There's a Jordan feel. I'm getting like a Jordan feel from just like his bat is incredible. Like it's so quick and it just looks so easy. And I don't know. I get like little chills watching him hit sometimes. Like this dude is going to hurt people. And I used to think like it's going to be, they're going to try to keep him at catcher. And it's the Orioles too. So he may be 3 or 4 years from now before we see him, and he's just destroying AAA, you know, but you never know what they're going to do. I do think he's a superior hitter to like everyone else they got.
You think he's better than Mayo?
What's up?
Better than Mayo?
I think he's better than Mayo. I think he's better than Kjerstad. I think he's just going to be a better hitter than all those guys. But I mean, I really like Mayo too. It's just that I just think he's special.
That's high praise, and
I don't even know him that high. I think I've got Basayo like 23rd in terms of like when I look at my personal prospect rankings, and Mayo's 14th, and that includes Yamamoto ahead of him. So I think Mayo is part of the reason is because I think he's got a little bit more defensive versatility than Basayo has.
Oh,
so,
sure.
So he, you know, more to your point, James, I think he's got a quicker path to more at bat, regular at bats. But he's got a sexy swing. I mean, it is fun. I have him ahead of Salas personally in the battle of the breakout 2023 catchers.
Well, be careful how loudly you broadcast that, because Salas is like one of those. Salas is probably like a top three prospect of like I get just. Like hate tweets when he's not ranked as high as people want to see him ranked. So Jeff takes Lourdes Gurriel 5th overall, takes him from Eddie. They thought it was great for Lourdes's value that he's back with the D-backs, just kind of eases any kind of concerns about the role, the fit. Thought that was a really solid everyday player who slots in an outfield. I don't know.
It's a very Highlander pick. 100 yeah. Outfielders. Yeah. Like in this league, that dude has quite a bit of value.
And a good reminder to all of us, like just no one has arguably ever had a worse season than he had in 2022. I mean, it was just disgusting. And just, you know, sometimes I think you have to remember, like when we look at these players who do have some kind of a track record, that he was free last year and provide a value in pretty much, you know, almost any league you were going to draft him in for sure. So I think it's just, this is, he's like one of those reminders of, you know, whoever the worst possible year, if they've shown talent in the past, it's in there, and it's worth, especially in these, in draft champion season and in best ball season. Those are the types of guys that I'm targeting. I'm trying to think of, I'm doing a terrible job podcasting. I can't think of it off the top of my head.
My guy for that is Jose Abreu. I think Jose Abreu is going to have a really big year. First year with a new team, and he hit like 8 homers in his last month, basically last year, 7 homers, something like that. And then he had that massive stretch where I think he was playing through something, and he like went months without a homer. So Jose Abreu is my pick for that. But
I think Story's got a chance to be it this year in Boston. He'd be someone I'd be looking at who is just, you know, these are human beings. Something goes wrong, they lose the season. I'm hoping that Kyle Manzardo is the prospect version of that.
Well, I'm hoping as well. He's my first baseman of the future on my spreadsheets here, at least. Okay, so then Drew Wheeler takes Charlie Morton, 6th overall. And this, at this point, like, you know, I traded for Jose Berrios as a keeper before this. Like I just said, I was worried someone might steal Luis Severino. Like, that's the caliber of pitcher we're looking at here. So Charlie Morton goes, and Itch was saying like John Means was the pitcher he had circled. So yeah, I mean, I think in with that context, nothing wrong with going with the guy who starts for Atlanta. Even though the end is near with Morton, but it's not quite here yet. And then I took Gabriel Moreno with the 7th overall pick. He was the top guy on my board. I've been using these drafts basically to just fill needs. Catcher, I thought, was my weakest position. I had Danny Jansen, but I'm just kind of sick of the playing time limitations there. And I think Gabriel Moreno, 7th in a dynasty league like this, behind some of the guys we mentioned, is a pretty good good value. But I also think it speaks to the depth of catcher that, you know, like none of the teams that already had a catcher that they liked are going to take Gabriel Moreno to plug into their util spot here. So I don't know. Either you guys have any thoughts on Moreno?
I like Moreno. It's been another interesting kind of prospect to develop. I'm curious, James. One of the guys I always compare him with right now is who I ended up keeping going into this is Keibert Ruiz. They're both kind of like, I feel like they're both young catchers with high floors and maybe not high ceilings, but just should amass playing time and have some power, not kill your batting average type of players. I think I like Keibert's power upside a little bit more than Moreno's, but I feel like Moreno probably might have the batting average.
I love Keibert. If Moreno was not available and Keibert Ruiz was available, I would have taken Ruiz with the 7th pick there. And I do think Ruiz is a value in redraft right now because he's going, like 2 rounds after Moreno. I think it's a good comparison. I think they're both high floor guys. Don't really know where the power settles with Moreno, but I think that's a pretty fair comp. Then Chris Clegg takes Kerry Carpenter, closes me out. I know Chris, you said you were eyeing him up. I kind of pivoted. I originally was planning on keeping Carpenter, and then I traded for Parker Meadows from Jesse. I traded Curtis Mead for Parker Meadows. And, you know, I figured if I didn't keep one of those guys, I assumed Carpenter was going to get poached. But I think he's got a lower ceiling than Parker Meadows. And I think just the defensive gap there like if I want to designate one of these guys as a keeper, when we have to announce our first designations in season this year, I'd be more likely to keep a guy that's a premium defensive center fielder like Meadows than a guy who probably fits best at DH like Carpenter. But I think he's really safe as long as the playing time's there.
Yeah, just think about those three. I mean, you throw in also like Riley Green, and like you're starting to see a Tigers team that's starting to come together. I think it's a roster to keep your eye on, you know, as Colt Keith makes its way on it. Torkelson has kind of established himself, and they've got, you know, Henry Molloy and you know, Max Clark and others coming. Just a little bit of a I think it's a team we've been kind of – the ballpark's not great. There's no getting away from that for hitters, but – I do think it's an interesting team to start looking at because I think some of the counting stats could be ticking up in the coming years.
Yeah, I really like Carpenter. I still think I might have taken Manoah over Carpenter off your just from, you know, I mean, he was – you couldn't have traded for him last year. Like, I think you'd have just probably
shut it down. Well, I think he was one of my three keepers last year, one of my three franchise players last year.
Like in most dynasty leagues, if you wanted to trade for him, I don't even know how you get into the conversation because the person who has him is probably looking to shut the conversation down as quickly as possible. And so I was thinking this is the chance, you know, this is what this league's all about, you know. But and Carpenter and Melendez are both such, like, you know, they're not the hardest pieces to lose. A power corner bat without, like you said, I do really like Carpenter though. Like, I do think he can really hit, but I also think it's going to be a battle because they've got so many pieces and they have taken their time sorting through these pieces. Like, they could have been, Justin Henry Molloy could have been up last year. Like, they could have been looking at some of this stuff, but they just are taking their time. I don't know.
I assume Molloy is just a absolute statue, because that's the only reasoning I can see for why he didn't come up at some point last year. But that is the problem with them trying to sort out that roster, is they have like four of these guys that ideally you just be DHing, or, you know, like Colt Keith. I mean, Parker Meadows has been a better defender than I think, you know, the scouting report on him before he debuted would have been, but they have a few guys where it's like, you know, there's only room for one DH. But yeah, a lot of talented hitters. And then Brandon Drury, Chris's pick. I think you absolutely nailed it, like with the playing time and the lineup placement. I don't think people realize how bad, or most people realize maybe, but some people might not realize how bad the Angels are going to be this year. But they're going to be one of the worst teams in baseball, and that's going to help Drury in terms of he's just going to hit like third maybe all year, might even just hit behind Mike Trout. And then the biggest thing really with him besides the playing time is that 1B, 2B eligibility. I mean, that's just that's kind of like the dream. If you could just have two positions going corner, middle, just great. Eligibility there for Drury. Did you have anything you wanted to add on that pick, Chris?
You summed it up well.
All right. And then Itch, we kind of discussed means. The contract year part's a good thing to mention there too. And just because, you know, he's going to want to show what he can do, and they're not necessarily going to feel the need to be that protective of him unless they – are planning to.
It's a cold world, you know. Like Baltimore, like our relationship might be over after this year. So we were maybe in the playoff push, and I don't know. Like, you worry about, especially a team like Baltimore, getting finicky with innings counts for an injured pitcher. But I'm just not, because I don't know. I just don't see a world where they pay him any money. He's going to be a free agent. No matter what he does, I just can't imagine that they're even going to be in the contention to get him back, because that's just not how that front office operates. Maybe, I mean, they bought Kimbrel for what, 13 million, but we aren't talking about 13 million. Like, if John Means stays healthy, he's going to be a $100 million pitcher, or, you know, something like that.
Right. If he's good enough that they would want to bring him back, he'll be more expensive than they want him to
that's
be.
Probably the, yeah, that's really well said. he's in the catch 22, you know, and so he's just pitching for free agent money. But then they'll also have, you know, want to win. You know, you want to win.
I mean, I think they could win the World Series. You know, I mean, they're loaded. They're the deepest team probably in the league, and they've got the most to trade without it affecting the big league product. So, and I love Kimbrel there. I think that's just a match made in heaven. So this was funny. Speaking of closers, like Eric Cross takes Kenley Jansen here, closes out Akeem with the 11th pick. And I think he had two of his closers poached, right? Or no, he lost Paul Sewald, but he was hoping to get Jansen and then not have Sewald poached. So I don't know if he would have preferred to just take Sewald over Jansen and knowing that he wasn't going to be able to keep Jansen, but
try to get cute.
He and he said that in the league chat.
Yeah.
Tried to get cute.
I got hopefully lucky, although there's a raging debate on fantasy baseball Twitter right now because I have a Robert Stevenson and I didn't protect him. And if this draft was held probably week, I doubt I'd still have Stevenson. Although whether or not he's the closer or not is being furiously debated
I saw my guy Mattywood screenshotting the player shares there. Gotta be careful, man. I hope that works out for you, but I gotta go a little faster with these. Logan Ohapi to Michael Waterloo at 12. Ohapi was my second option. Like if Moreno wasn't there, I was taking Ohapi. Think he's, you know, a lot of the same things we said about Drury apply to Ohapi. I think he's going to play a ton and he's going to hit 25 homers, and I think that's going to be a solid pick. And then Sewald goes, like we said, to Ken at 13. And you know, closers in this league, like I protected Andres Munoz, Itch protected Camilo Duvall, Chris protected Tanner Scott. So, you know, that caliber of closer was getting protected before this draft. So guys like Jansen, Sewald were the best of the bunch from the closers available there. Jet Williams, any of you guys have any thoughts on Jet? I don't think I would have taken him just because of this specific league and the fact that I've just got too many middle infielders as it is. But you guys got anything to say about Jet Williams, who went 14th to Alex Sanchez?
No, I totally agree with you. Just he's not coming up this year probably. And I am trying to win this year. And I, you know, it feels like the kind of thing you're just daring somebody to take him from you a little bit.
I guess if it just depends if Alex is starting to build for the future and maybe just throwing together a bunch of young picks to see what sticks, it makes sense. But definitely wasn't even remotely on my board.
So then Jose Alvarado goes 15th. You know, that one that to Eddie Almaguer from his own team. That's apparently an Eddie move to protect his own players in these drafts. But
he likes his guys.
Yeah, I mean, Alvarado, like, talked about him a few weeks ago. But, you know, the strikeouts, you know, he could be like a top five reliever in strikeouts if he stays healthy all season, but he doesn't usually stay healthy all season. And then, you know, I don't know, for saves, I'd probably take the under on 20 from Alvarado, but probably over 10.
I think he's the best. He was the best for me at this point. Like you pointed out, almost all the closes are kept. So at this point, if you needed saves, I think it's a, you know, like you said, maybe you get 20 saves out of him. There's not a lot else out there.
And then Smata takes Hurston Waldrop at 16th. I know Smata's a Waldrop guy, as am I. I know they were in dire straits towards the end of the last year where there were rumors that they might bring Waldrop up. But I do think they've done a pretty good job of building out that rotation, at least heading into spring training with the Sale trade. So I doubt we see Waldrop super early, but I think he probably debuts this year if he can keep the walks in check.
He's Smott is in a cycle too. He took Basayo there, and Alex Sanchez, they're good picks for that because you want guys that other people are going to want to take from you in that cycle, because then you can protect your other guys who, you know, hopefully you're going to create more booms than they can take away from you. And I think Waldrop is a good pick for that. But I wouldn't eye any really.
Yeah. It just depends where you're at in the draft specifically. Like, I was nowhere near this pick. Wheeler picking 17th. Drew Wheeler actually picking 17th and 19th. He grabs Eugenio Suarez and J.P. Crawford. These guys aren't outfielders, but like we were saying with like Lourdes Gurriel, like these guys are going to basically play every day. Crawford definitely going to play every day. I like the change of scenery for Suarez. I think just, you know, I don't know how much is left in the tank there, but at least getting him out of the park in Seattle can't hurt. And does seem like the Diamondbacks have a pretty good idea what they're doing. And then J.P. Crawford, I guess, you know, do you believe he's a 20-homer guy, 15-homer guy after last year's relative power breakout? In this league, it's going to be great because he's going to play every day.
And he's going to give you a batting average floor. And, you know, it wasn't just a fluke, right? I mean, he made intentional changes to his swing and to pull more balls out and hit more out, and it worked. I mean, Dave McDonald and Jake were talking Hollisker. About this on Hollisker. We're talking the dust mite. We're talking about this on the Rotosaurus podcast. And hey, like, believe that some people, when they're going to driveline, make changes that work. I mean, these people aren't doing it. It's not that everybody goes and it's become kind of a punchline. Oh, he went to driveline, best shape of his life. But it actually works for a lot of people. That's why they're doing it. They're professional athletes. They're taking this seriously. And J.P. Crawford made a change. And I'd bet between 15 to 20, James, for homers.
I think that's the range. And then sandwiched in between those Wheeler picks, Smott, I got another young guy, Jacob Mizorowski. Just a ton of fearsome stuff there from Waldrop and Mizorowski and picks that were separated by Eugenio Suarez.
Is he a starter, James? He's your team.
They're gonna just. I think they're gonna do the exact same thing with him that they did with like Burns and Woodruff back in the day. Awesome. I think he's just. I think he pitches out of the bullpen late this season. If he's healthy and if there's any reason to have him up. And then he would compete for a rotation spot next spring would be how I would see it playing out. Although Waldrop and Mizorowski both ridiculous stuff, you know, one of the best sliders in the minors, one of the best changeups in the minors in Waldrop, Mizorowski with the slider, but they got to throw strikes, you know, it's still.
I'm much lower on Mizorowski and Big Miz, they call him, than the field, just because the bullpen risk and the strike throwing. It seems like a challenge to me. But I wasn't sure. I wanted to get your take on him because I'm definitely an outlier on where I am with them. But you can see, I think, here Smata rebuilding clearly with youth.
And then Shelley closes out the first round with what I thought was a great pick in Will Benson. Will Benson was first on my board at this point for my second pick, which was due up in seven picks after this. So, you know, Benson, he's not going to play as much as guys like Nimmo and Gurriel and maybe even Melendez. But I think he's got a higher ceiling to dream on, I think, than those guys. And even if he's strong side platoon, just the raw power and speed in the park, pretty appealing to me in this type of league.
Yeah, he's going to make that park look really small a lot. And yeah, I mean, you said that was – it was whose pick was that?
Shelly?
Yeah, right on. I think she's a Reds fan or at least
– Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even make that connection. But so
that's a little extra treat always, you know. You can get the high upside dude that you're going to watch a lot.
I thought I thought about Benson in my pick or my first pick. I mean, he was in the consideration for me, just given his age, what he's done. I went with a little bit of a higher floor, I think. But so
and that feels like breakout city, like whatever has gone on with the recent everything with the baseball and global climate change and who knows what all. But Cincinnati is where you want your hitters. Obviously, I'm saying the most obvious thing in the world, but it seems more extreme than it's ever been.
Well, they kind of are messing with us fantasy players by having like
so many hitters,
one and a half too many guys. So, we all know that we want Reds hitters, and you just want to make sure you don't get the guy that isn't getting the full time job. But I think with Benson, it's just kind of cut and dry. He's going to strong side platoon, and maybe he plays his way into a full time role, but. I mean, in terms of big leaguers with like kind of pre-prime big leaguers with those types of tools, he does seem pretty unique in this draft. The guys that have those type of tools are usually prospects at this stage of things. So I thought that was a good pick at 20. Then we got Colton Cowser goes 21 to Brett. Brady House 22 to Alex Sanchez. Josh Bell, 23, to Kevin Hastings. Chris Farges takes J.D. Martinez at 24. Jeff takes Brendan Donovan at 25. I'd love to see that Jeff's back in on Donovan, going back to the well there. You guys have any thoughts on Cowser, House, Bell, J.D., or Donovan?
This wish... J.D. Martinez would sign somewhere. I was tweeting about it earlier today. I think there's like 23 to 25 fantasy relevant players that have not signed, and let alone the impact that's having on other players that we have that we're drafting. It just feels like early drafting seasons more dangerous than ever this year. But all those were solid picks for my concern with Cowser is just once again, kind of like the. Forecasting where the Orioles are going to be, where the Reds are now with Benson. It's like, how much playing time is he going to get? Where is it going to be?
Yeah. I mean, the JD thing, I assume he gets everyday plate appearances. He was awesome to have last year. Would have loved to see him back with the Dodgers, but we know that's not happening. Then 26 got Connor Norby to Alex Sanchez, another Oriole. Is that the third Oriole prospect, basically? Yeah. Three hitting prospects in John Means so far for the Orioles. And then my second and final pick, Leody Taveras, closing out Clegg. This was just, to me, best outfielder available here. Because I got MJ Melendez and Kerry Carpenter poached. So I just had two outfield spots to kind of make up. And that was my kind of thinking was with my second pick. If I lost pitching, I would take a pitcher. And if I lost outfielders, I'd take an outfielder. And probably for the best because the pitching was really kind of drying up. But I think Taveras, he's not going to go. He's not going to hit 25 homers or steal 30 bases, but I think he's just solid. Chris Clegg takes Brooks Lee. Chris, you took Christopher Sanchez. Sanchez would have been my pick if I had opted to go starting pitcher. I think he just was really, really good down the stretch last year, and it's – I know he doesn't have the most kind of prospect pedigree per se, but, he's been a guy that prospector, like I've been following Sanchez for a while and you know, what he showed with the weak contact and the strike throwing. I mean, there'll be some regression there, but I thought Sanchez at this stage of things, really nice starting pitching option to go with.
Yeah, I was really, I needed pitching. I was ecstatic to get him there. He's showing up on a lot of Ryan Bloomfield's bloom boards this offseason. He's got a lot of, I do like him more than I liked Ranger Suarez coming out of his breakout, but there is a little bit of that worry in the back of my mind, given that he kind of, not that he came out of nowhere, but he certainly exceeded expectations. I'll be honest with you, I'm definitely sitting on the fence with him. I have traded him away in a couple of other dynasty leagues, and this was like, well, I have to have some Sanchez in case it does go well. So I was really happy to get him here.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good pick. Like, I mean, I was eyeing Sanchez there. I do think he was the best innings left on the board. And you're looking for wins. I mean, it's a cutthroat win situation too with the 20 teams, and we're running out 5, 6, 7 starters a week. And you need those. You need starters on good teams. I mean,
yeah, I mean, if all he really has to do is just be good enough to like keep his job, you know, and yeah, it's a decent pick
for real. Yeah.
And I think there's room for him to be better than that. But like,
yeah,
you know, I don't think you're trying to hit a home run with this pick, Chris. I think it's just,
no, he's my fifth starter. I've got Webb, Senga, Bailey Ober, Tristan McKenzie. And then, so I wanted a good number five starter. So it feels like that he fits the bill perfectly for that.
So when I was looking into him, this is what I had seen, is that his changeup usage went up about 12%, and his changeup is untouchable. Like a 274 slug in 477 pitches and a 40.6% strikeout rate. Like, he just started throwing this changeup all the time, and nobody could touch it. And so, I mean, if he can just keep doing that, I don't see why. Yeah, 97th percentile chase rate in the league, just as people swung over the top of that thing.
And then you took his teammate with the very next pick, Johan Rojas. I was actually I just wrapped up a dynasty startup draft that I'm co-managing with a buddy, and he was pushing for Rojas a little harder than I was. I mean, the defense is fantastic, the speed's fantastic. Why don't you kind of talk about what you see with Rojas?
Well, I think he's one of the tougher evals for fantasy because he didn't really seize that role in an everyday way until really late, and they jumped him straight over Triple-A. And I don't know that he even had that many games in Double-A. He had 136 games in Double-A across 2 years, and then they jumped him over Triple-A, and the strikeout rates were always good all the way up. And I just feel like he's played mostly young and have just been trying to keep up. And this will be his first chance. And even this offseason, there have been several different quotes about, like, I'm on his Fangraphs page right now, and said Rojas will have to earn the everyday center field job next spring. There's a quote from a month later from Dombrowski saying it's actually his job right now. That was never mind what I said. And so, it's like, I don't know, he's just in a really interesting situation. He stole 44 bases last year across both levels, and I know the stolen bases are devalued. It's just, he managed a 109 WRC plus, hit 302 in 164 plate appearances as a rookie who was just trying to keep up in the jump from Double-A right into a pennant chase. And I think his numbers sort of somehow don't matter in the eval. Like, I don't know, he's just a really interesting case in my opinion. And I didn't really love the pick. I was sort of settled on Sanchez actually, but I wanted to make sure Jesse got 3-4, you know. And I really like Rojas. It's part of it is I've always loved speed. I like to just make sure I have enough steals. And
yeah. I think that's a compelling case. I remember, I think a year or over a year ago, maybe I think I probably read too much into his lefty righty splits in the minors. Like, he just absolutely mashes lefties and struggles or had struggled against righties. But I think I remember last year he kind of improved that a decent amount. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if Dave thought he was getting a center fielder this winter or not, but you know, he pretty much just had to beat out Christian Pache. I don't know, like Jake Cave, Christian Pache. I think he could beat those guys out.
If he can, it was a bad pick.
All right. So Eric Cross takes John Gray, just, you know, another innings eater. Alex Sanchez goes young again, gets Spencer Jones. Ken took Brandon Woodruff. You know, just, and then, you know, there was actually before my second pick, before I took Tavares, I think I mentioned I was texting with Smata, and I was like, I'm glad Felix Bautista was not even available for that pick, so I didn't have to consider him. But like, because I think the team that had Felix Bautista got closed off. But like per my rankings, Felix Bautista would have definitely been the best player available. But then another injured pitcher, Brandon Woodruff, goes. So I mean, that's kind of your options, and you can shop in the sort of John Gray's section, or you can sort of take a big swing and stash a guy like Brandon Woodruff and see how that plays out. You know, I was kind of surprised, Chris, that Alex Verdugo lasted as long as he did. You got him at pick 34 here. Yep. I've never really been a Verdugo guy, but I mean, if ever there's a league for him, it's this type of league.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Yankees fan and I have hated him, although he looks a lot better. And I hate the, as a proud beard wearer, I also hate the Yankees, the way they force people to shave, but he does unequivocally look a lot better in the Bronx than he did in Fenway. And the thing is, he might lead off, like, there's against righties anyway. I mean, they don't have an obvious leadoff hitter. You know, I even if he's just an accumulator that doesn't hurt my batting average at this phase, I'm ecstatic. And I traded for an extra, I traded Marcus Stroman and Ryan Noda for this pick from with Jordan. It was a little bit of a gamble. Noda, I like him, but I just think he's going to be a batting average drag, and I didn't necessarily need him. And Stroman, I like as well, but I like Sanchez more. So it worked out. I was able to get like a bit of a starting pitcher because, you know, Sanchez being much younger than Stroman in terms of dynasty, a more valuable pitcher. And then I was ecstatic that Verdugo was still there. I don't know. I think people just don't like him because he's kind of a jerk, so no one drafts him. And he doesn't really do anything that makes you happy. But in this league, 100 outfielders, yeah, he'll do the job.
I think the reason people don't draft him is because he's like his career high in homers is 13. But
it could be part of it, James.
But
he doesn't run either.
No, well, yeah, I mean he's good for like four to five steals. But yeah, I mean he's gone up over 75 runs three straight years. He's a career 281 hitter. So he's not, you know, he's good at some stuff, and the Yankees don't have many lefties, and they, yeah. I don't think they brought him in to not play him. So
no, he's also, you know, as the Yankees try to, I think, become less one-dimensional in terms of the approach at the plate, the exact type of hitter that he's like the guy they wanted, you know, they want DJ LeMahieu kind of to be, you know, and maybe he'll find some power in that stadium. But he's a knucklehead. So we'll see what happens.
I think he's a good bet for that LeMahieu bump of just a bunch of cheap homers to right center field.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's a knucklehead. I think he's got tattoos that people might associate with knuckleheads, but
up in Boston, he just seems to always say the wrong thing to people. So I'm in the New England area. So I mean, he did. I think he took a bunch of shots and made John Papelbon angry, which I loved. I have to be honest, that made me very happy because I can't stand Papelbon. But I don't. He's never gotten in trouble. I guess you're right, James. Like in any kind of serious way, but he just never seems like he's all the way into the game.
Yeah, I mean, no arguments, no arguments here. So then the final six picks, Chris Clegg takes Max Meyer, Jeff takes Orlando Arcia, Akeem takes Mitch Garver, Chris Farges took Marcus Stroman, Jesse Roach took Robert Suarez, and Shelley takes Dustin May. Itch, do you have any thoughts on those guys or any just kind of closing thoughts on this league or how the thing unfolded and where your team's at?
Well, if the Arcia pick happens earlier, I do something else to get a middle infielder. It's one of the sort of quirks of this league that he takes really late in the draft, my shortstop or my middle infielder. And so now I head into the next thing. And I would love, I probably would have taken Crawford if I'd have foreseen, and maybe I should have. That's part of the board game aspect of it, is I should have maybe foreseen that somebody might take Arcia and taken Crawford at 110 and tried to get a different pitcher at 310 or 210 and 310, whatever. And I really like Crawford this year. And so afterward, I was sort of thinking I look better with Crawford at middle infield and somebody at pitcher, you know, whoever's there. But yeah, I don't know. You can't, you know, you can't plan for every contingency. You just have to sort of roll the dice.
That is a brutal, brutal way for it to play out, though, where you, none of your guys get taken, and then pick 36 and pick 39, you get closed out, and that's after you're done picking. Those breaks.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
What about you, Chris? You got any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, you know, highly recommend people look into the structure of the league and try to replicate it. As you guys have talked about, it is, hopefully we try to make it not too much insider baseball, but it is, the league rules are really quirky. And to Nick's point, like, I mean, I got lucky. I got Brooks Lee and Connor Norby taken, guys that are not on my major league roster. I'm not counting on them this year. I'm actually not even super high on Lee, and Norby I won't be high on unless he gets traded. So it was one of those situations where you can just the complexity. I think the board game analogy is a really good one. It's like you're playing, you know, some very complex board game that I don't play. It's certainly not, I don't think it's not chess. It's certainly not checkers. It's not even chess. It's something more complicated. So, but I think that I would encourage everyone to like, take a look at the league. Everybody in this league is a super nice person. If you like reach out to us, ask like, hey, you know, how did you set it up? How does this work? What are the rules? The idea, I think, behind this league was to introduce a new quirk to the dynasty game, which is my favorite kind of game, but it's can get stale to your point, James, and there can be months of inactivity. And this is the most active dynasty league I've ever been a part of. And so those are my general thoughts on it. It's super fun and just happy to be able to be in it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Feel free to reach out to me or reach out to Jesse or Brad or anyone else in the league, and we'll share the constitution with you. Definitely would, if you can find, you know, 20 good friends or just.
You can do it with 12.
You can do it with 12. You can do it with 15. You really just need people that want to be in this type of league. And I think the off-season drafts are really good for – I mean, I think really what it was, what Brett – the reason Brett came up with these specific rules were because – and I was in some of these leagues with him where just – if you were in a dynasty league, a lot of times by, like, year seven, there's, like, three teams that have just monster rosters, and there's, like, eight teams that have no chance of ever – climbing out of the gutter, and it just, the league's kind of broken at that point. And so with these rules, it's hard for a team to really separate themselves over for a long, you know, period of time. And it's hard for a team to really kind of fall completely out of, you know, having good players on their roster because of these redistribution drafts and stuff. So,
and like the notion of like literally I'm coming down and I'm like, when James took Kyle Bradish from me, it was just like, it's, you know, it's like, it's fun though. It's like, it's dramatic. It adds like this element of like,
fun.
Done. It definitely fun. Cause he's going to be really good again. But like, that's, but it's super, strategic and interesting and also fun. Like, this game should be fun.
Absolutely. That's a good way to end this one. Really appreciate you guys taking the time. This was a lot of fun, and I'll be back with another episode next week.